Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to another reality show. This is Golden Hawk. I will be your host for the next 2 hours. And, we have something very interesting going on. It is showtime. I'm live. And my exquisite guest, Rosemary Guiley, is not queued up on my switchboard. So, you know, just to make life interesting, I'm actually going to call a mutual friend of ours on my cell phone and see if I can track Rosemary down, because when I used to do terrestrial radio, which was, you know, at a regular radio station, I always called my guests. And if I'm correct, I don't think the last time me and Rosemary did a show, we were actually all in the same house doing the show. So I think she's waiting for me to call her. Again, I'm going to do my best. Phil, hold on, audience. Phil, this is Goldie. I'm live on the air. I'm looking for Rosemary, who's supposed to be live on the air with me. If you get this message and you have Rosemary's number, please call her and tell her to call 646-929-2084. Thanks. Bye. Okay. Okay, well, listen, if I have any friends out there that want to sit here and chat with me, this is going to be a great show. I'm very much looking forward to the show. What I'm going to do is I have looked up Rosemary. I don't have Rosemary's number in my contact information. If anybody out there listening knows where Rosemary is, that would be cool too. I left Rosemary a message on Facebook. She did. Actually, let me see if Rosemary's online right now. No, I do not see her online. Okay. Well, I guess what I'm going to do is, boy, I'll tell you too, Rosemary's an amazing guest. Well, let me read you about who Rosemary is. Even though she's not here, I'm going to read to you about who she is, because that's how big a presence Rosemary is. All right, Rosemary Guiley is one of the leading experts on the paranormal and supernatural. With 41 books, including 9 encyclopedias, and hundreds of articles in print on a wide range of paranormal, spiritual, and mystical topics, Rosemary possesses an exceptional knowledge of the field. She has approximately 1 million copies in print. Her popular encyclopedias on ghosts and spirits, angels, vampires and werewolves, magic and alchemy, witchcraft, demons, dreams, mystical and paranormal experience, and saints are considered essential sources for authors, researchers, film and documentary producers, and paranormal investigators. Her work has been translated into... I see somebody on the line. Hold on. Let's see. Hello?
Hey, Goldie. It's Rosemary.
Hey! Okay, wait. Good. I knew you'd come on. Let me finish your introduction.
Okay.
I love you, Ro. Okay. Essential sources for authors, researchers, film and documentary producers, and paranormal investigators. Her work has been translated into 14 languages and has been selected by major book clubs around the world. She appears in television programs, documentaries, and docudramas with paranormal themes and makes numerous media and lecture appearances, including colleges and universities. Rosemary conducts original fields of investigation, hauntings, and at mysterious sites. Her website is visionaryliving.com. Welcome to the show, Rosemary. I love you.
Hi, Goldie. It's great to be back.
Indeed, indeed. Did you have you been having a most interesting first month of 2010?
Well, it's been very intensive on writing. I have a lot of deadlines, and winter is always a good time for me to write. The weather's bad. Don't like to travel.
Right.
So I've really been hitting the keyboard.
Oh, excellent. Well, I guess you know, with 41 books and more coming, God bless you, Rosemary. I mean, clearly.
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm honored. Honored to have you here. Honored to be. You know, we have a mutual love for our dear friend Phil Imbrogno. But I am honored to share that you get the whole 2 hours, my friend, because you are a plethora of wisdom, truly a plethora of wisdom. Now, clearly, 41 books, there's plenty to talk about, but what we're going to talk about today is we're going to focus on dreams.
One of my
favorite
topics.
Yeah, well, I'll be honest with you. It's becoming, I think, a most fascinating topic as consciousness shifts, you know, because the dream state is really, I guess on some level, and please correct me if I'm wrong, on some level the dream state is the subconscious mind, as well as, you know, because it's in the dream state, it's very much, from my perspective anyway, it's the soul's expression, because in the dream state there is no time and there's no limitations to time and or space, which is very similar to when we're non-physical beings, yet it's a part of our physical experience because we go to bed at night and we dream.
We do transcend time and space in our dreams. I think that at least a portion of our dreaming involves out-of-body experiences at night.
Right.
Now, our dreams are really mirrors of truth. They reflect to us our honest feelings about how we're doing in life. They can also focus the future for us because they sweep that time-space landscape and pick up on forces in motion. They can tell us about our past. We can have past life recall in dreams.
Wow.
We can have healing encounters in dreams, healing experiences, encounters with other beings, angels, extraterrestrials, however we interpret them. We can come into contact with them in this wonderful dreamscape, which is beyond the bounds of ordinary waking consciousness.
Okay, so from your perspective, how would you define dreams?
I think that our dreams are part of our multidimensional experience. We often think of them as illusory or imagination or fantasy because they don't conform to the rules of waking consciousness. But actually, it's just part of our experience in another reality, which has just as much validity as a waking life does here. So it's the body is regenerating during sleep and during dreaming, but our consciousness is traveling to have experiences that are usually beyond us in ordinary reality. So it's part of our growth, part of our experience, our spiritual development. We can solve problems. We can have enlightening experiences, even mystical experiences in dreams.
Yeah, no, wow, beautifully stated. I absolutely agree. Because I've heard from a few people that I guess have studied in, and I believe you're one of them too. You've studied in like dream colleges. I don't. What are they? What are these places called? Dream conscious space, or?
Well, you might be thinking of incubation spaces, places where you go to incubate dreams.
I know that like the Monroe Institute is not necessarily dreaming, even though it's playing with levels of consciousness. But aren't there like master teachers who teach like how to go lucid in your dreams and kind of like learning to master the dreamscape, which in turn helps us to master the awakened state?
I do think it's important for us to understand our dreams. And yes, there are all kinds of courses available to people to better understand their dreams and also to learn techniques for expanding their dreaming experiences. I was on the board of directors for a while for the International Association for the Study of Dreams, and they do run a lot of courses. They have regional symposiums and an international conference every year. There are a lot of people who are very good at lucid dreaming who do teach a variety of techniques as well. And
okay.
You can find a lot of those just by browsing around on the Internet.
Right. In other words, that information is pretty freely available.
Right. And as a layperson, you know, I'm not a clinical psychologist, but I do lay dream work. That is, I facilitate dream work interpretation and understanding, usually for groups. It can be a very rewarding experience in a group because you have a lot of creative ideas going on. But ultimately, only the dreamer can understand the meaning of his or her dream. It's an intensely subjective personal experience. Yet there are universal perspectives to dreams that apply to a lot of people. And when you work in a group, other people can get ideas about how they might interpret a dream that can awaken a creative process in yourself. So, you know, people can have remarkable insights and have, you know, these leaps in consciousness and make tremendous progress to resolving problems and conflicts and healing inner wounds simply by paying attention to their dreams.
Oh, that's exquisite. So the importance of a dream journal and or somehow, like filing the information that, you know, whether we write it down or speak it into a recorder, however we do it, it can really help to be... Boy, am I tongue-tied tonight. Okay, let's take a breath, Goldie. And the truth is, you say it so eloquently, I should just ask you the question and let you speak it. So how important is it to have a dream journal?
Well, you can't do the dream work without some record of your dreams because we forget them. Dreams are very fleeting.
Right.
If we don't get them down or at least spend some time with them, they go right out of memory. They get replaced by, you know, the busyness of waking consciousness. So even if you just repeat the dream to yourself, you're going to impress it on your memory. It's better to write it down or speak it into a tape recorder. That's how you have the raw material for dream work. You have to have descriptions of the imagery, the contents, the theme, the action, colors. Even your choice of words when you record a dream can be important to unlocking a lot of powerful energy.
Wow. Because I guess it's all about perception, right, of how we're perceiving the dream?
Our dreams speak to us in images, and images contain a lot of information. In fact, a single image can often contain far more than you could write about it.
Right.
When we're dealing with images, we're using an intuitive process that goes very deep within us. And that's one of the beauties of the dream, about being this mirror of truth. In powerful images, dreams can convey an incredible amount of information. Most of that information is going to be about ourselves and our place in life, our place in the scheme of things, our relationships. Dreams are very good at addressing our problems and anxieties because they're really healing tools, but they also stretch out further than that. They give us glimpses of who we are as a human being, as a soul, where we're going on our spiritual journey. And much of that is contained in image. So the process of dream work is highly intuitive. We look at the images, we get feelings about them. Images speak to us on many, many different levels. And that's how we start unlocking the dream. So we have to have that raw material to work with first. The more you record your dreams and think about them and try and get to the heart of them, the easier it gets.
Okay. When you say get to the heart of them, can you go deeper into, like, can you either describe the process or describe a personal experience or somehow expand on what you mean by getting to the heart of the dream?
Well, on the surface, dreams often look very bizarre and puzzling to people, and consequently, a lot of people just dismiss them because they don't mirror real life. They've got strange imagery in them. We're doing weird things. Dreams jump around. They're not complete stories with a beginning, a middle, and an end. But all of those elements in a dream have meaning, and often multiple meanings. They might relate to several situations going on in life or to deep-seated emotions or dreams or ambitions that are going unrealized, perhaps something physical, spiritual, or psychological that's in need of attention or healing. So a single dream can have a lot of meaning to it, and that's what getting to the heart of it is. You start peeling back the layers of the dream by going intuitively into the imagery, and often even the simplest, strangest dream can have quite a profound meaning for the dreamer.
Right. Now, and I'm curious about something. As a dreamer, aren't all of the characters and all of the experiences in the dream coming, like my dreams are all me? Is that an accurate statement?
That's the current wisdom on dreams, that everything
okay.
in a dream reflects back to yourself or is a piece of yourself. Even monsters in dreams, for example.
Right,
or
right.
People in dreams, they're reflecting back something of ourselves, something we like or don't like. For example, quite often, dreams about famous people and celebrities really aren't about those people. They're about characteristics that we like in those people.
Okay.
Because, you know, celebrities are people we admire, usually. Now,
right.
some people might have, you know, some negative associations. So you have to look at both sides of the coin. But by and large, famous people, authority figures, celebrities, they've got something that we admire, that we would like to see in ourselves as well. So that's how we approach everything in a dream. And people are often surprised that even scary negative imagery in a dream has a beneficial purpose. In fact, sometimes our frightening dreams are just really trying to get our attention about something that needs to be addressed. And within the frightening imagery are the seeds for healing, for coming to terms with something, for bringing something dark into the light so that it can be dealt with.
Absolutely. You know, because it's so amazing. All the things that you're saying to define the dream state, for me, are very much also, you know, the prerequisite, so to speak, or not prerequisite, but it's what defines the ascension. You know, what you know is the big term now with light workers and New Age and all that is the ascension. It's like everything you're saying, bringing dark things into the light, it's all one, it's all self. It's an interesting analogy, you know, that it's almost like, oh, on some level in consciousness, we've always been living in that awareness. It's just we have to go to sleep to get there.
It seems,
you know what I mean?
Well, it seems that our dreams are kind of a shorthand way of arriving at a new awareness. We're really doing a lot of homework while we sleep. You know, the body's regenerating. The mind needs to rest. The vehicle that we're in needs that. But there is also something about dreaming that is important to our survival. And back in the 60s and 70s and 80s, parapsychologists and scientists were studying the mechanisms of dreaming. You know, how do we dream? And others were looking at, you know, why? What is the big meaning of dreaming? And one of the greatest figures in modern dream work, Montague Ullman, who did a lot of the groundbreaking work at Maimonides' laboratory on telepathy in dreams, came out with some excellent ideas about how dreaming is important for the survival of the species, that in addition to being important to ourselves, there's an interconnectedness that happens when we dream. Because actually, a lot of us share the dream landscape with others, and we don't know it because we don't talk about our dreams.
Right.
Every night that we dream, there are other people having the same dream or similar dreams. Some of them we know, and some of them we don't know. So we're all part of this nexus of of experience when we dream, and that this seems to have. Ullman was saying that he believed that it was very important for the continuity of humanity as well as the individual. The scientists have certainly demonstrated that if we are deprived of our dreaming sleep, we do begin to suffer physically and psychologically. And it's not just that we're fatigued; it starts to erode our immune system, our concentration, our general sense of well-being. But beyond that, there's a greater connection of consciousness involved in dreaming too. I have always felt that our dreaming reaches out into many dimensions, and that we are probably making connections that we might not even be able to remember because we don't comprehend them. When we're dreaming, we get inklings of them. We get those inklings through déjà vu, through a sense of having a big dream that has a lot of spiritual import to it. And there's something about this aspect of consciousness that I think is key to our connection to everything, our true multidimensional self.
I agree with you 100%. I don't necessarily understand it, but my intuition also tells me that master either one. If we master the waking state, we'll go lucid, so to speak, in our dreaming state. Go lucid in the dreaming state, you'll go lucid in the awakened state. It just seems like it's because I can't call it two sides of the same coin, because it seems like it's not as simplistic as just being awake and being asleep. There really is multiple levels of consciousness that are happening simultaneously. It just seems in my dream state, it's almost like when my consciousness gets out of the way, it's so much easier for me to travel in those experiences and become part of those experiences, because I'm not resisting them because of they're defying the physics, or I'm not resisting them, you know, because of all these belief systems I have in place.
Well, certainly a lot of our ideas and concerns and our sense of limitations and things like that, they do get challenged in dreaming. Our dreams can push, you know, our boundaries and cause great expansions of consciousness. People can have not only spiritual dreams that are very enlightening and even mystical in nature, but we also get a lot of ideas and inspirations.
Absolutely.
A lot of the inventions in the world today really had their seed in a dream. What the dreaming mind seems to be able to do is have breakthroughs that confound waking consciousness. But people put their effort in. You know, like, for example, let's say someone's working on an invention and there are problems and you can't come up with a solution, thinking a lot about it and looking at all possible angles. Well, sometimes the dreaming mind is able to sort through all of those things and take the leap beyond to show the solution. But you sort of did your homework while you were, you know, in the waking state.
Right,
but
right.
It takes the dreaming state to have the breakthrough.
Didn't a lot of Einstein's he went into like a light dreaming state to get, you know, E equals M squared. I believe I've read somewhere that he people don't know this, you know, obviously Edgar Cayce, you know, it's like he went to sleep for all his answers. But I have read things and that Einstein also did a lot of work in the dream state that and he would bring it out, you know, like you said, he would have insights and you know, almost like the door would open to a solution, and from there, in his waking state, the rest of it would come in.
Yes, he did. He often went into just kind of a light reverie, sort of like that twilight that a lot of people fall into, and we're not quite sleeping, but we're not quite awake. It's not quite napping either. But it is putting the consciousness in a different sort of gear. And a lot of scientists and inventors have gotten some of their major ideas that fell into place while they were dreaming. So our dreams really need to be paid attention to. In fact, we can't afford not to pay attention to our dreams. And what's happening right now, because we've got all of this talk going on about 2012, is that a lot of people are starting to dream around it. And some of these dreams are, I class them as just anxiety dreams. And, in fact, we saw this right around the turn of the millennium, you know, when a lot of people were worried about Y2K.
Right, right.
People start reporting disaster dreams and seeing things in upheaval and were worried that they were dreaming a literal future. A lot of these dreams seem to be more anxiety-based dreams. I think the media has done a pretty good job of whipping up our fear about...
feeding that, yeah, I agree totally on that.
But, you know, that cycle has started up again where people are previewing all kinds of disasters, and a lot of it has to do with this undercurrent of fear that's being propagated about 2012.
Right, right. Yeah, well, it's amazing how just how much we feed off of that. You know, it's interesting, though, when you say how important the dream is, it's almost like to not be aware of your dreams. That's a major piece of self that you're not putting into the equation. You know, it's almost like, I mean, because I don't remember my dreams every night, but I'm pretty conscious of my dream states. And I'm not saying I'm conscious of every dream I have, but when I wake up in the morning, you know, almost every day I'm waking up and I'm remembering what it is. And, you know, I'm because the first thing I do is check, how do you feel about this dream? And I don't write them down. And on several occasions, I've been told not only should I write it down, you know, to help myself record my own process of what I'm going through, what, you know, what all of humanity is going through, but my personal process of it. I've also been told, boy, you write it down, inevitably it's a book. For those of us who don't write as easily as you, Rosemary, that's a wonderful thing. You know, because it really is a... you know, an aspect, a very formidable, as you're saying, aspect of who we are is, you know, like the personal subjective who we are as the creator of our experience, which seems like to be, you know, in if all the world's a stage, then there's some real importance to that.
Well, you know, that dreaming journal, if you keep it over a period of time, and I've kept a dream journal since I was a teenager. That's when I got interested in dreams. You have a phenomenal record of yourself.
Exactly.
What shows up after not a very long period of time are patterns. You can see distinct patterns in dreams that tell you a lot about how you deal with things in waking life.
Oh, wow.
Remember, most of our dreams are about basically how we think we're doing in life, how we feel we're doing, I should say, because
okay.
dreams are heavily emotional, how we feel we're doing in life. And we're going to react to situations out of fear, anxiety. We're going to move forward, move backward, be joyful, be worried. And our dreams reflect that. And a lot of times when we try and cover things up in waking life, like ignore problems, try and get by, not want to
right.
deal with something, your dreams are not going to let you get away with it. And they will keep pushing things to the surface, to the forefront, to reflect to you that things are out of balance. Our dreams help us bring things back into balance. And, of course, when things are better in balance in waking life, that frees up a tremendous amount of energy for the spiritual life. And that's an important component to dreams, too. You know, everybody has at least a few dreams in life that, you know, we call them big dreams. They're like turning point
yep.
dreams. They're so vivid,
yep.
so powerful. They seem so transcendent that you couldn't possibly forget them.
Exactly.
And they often come at critical crossroads and points when we need to make decisions about who we are and what we are doing in this incarnation.
Yeah, they are our best teachers. We have a caller. Are you open? You're open to interpreting some dreams, or I'm not sure what the caller is going to do, but I'm going to put it out there if you're open for it.
Well, I can. Here's just some ground rules.
No problem. There you go. Speak. There you go.
The dreams have to be short. No kitchen sink dreams.
Okay.
Because it just gets too complicated and for people to track. And secondly, what I do is I don't tell people what their dreams mean. I offer some ideas about how I would interpret the dream if it were mine. And some of those will resonate with the dreamer and some won't.
Okay.
But this is how group dream work functions. You take the stuff that resonates and you work with that and go from there. This is why dream dictionaries are useful, because they provide a beginning point. You shouldn't take them as the end point. It's just a beginning point to get the creative process started.
Well said. Well said. Okay, and I'm going to put it out there too. The number to call in is 646-929-2084. This is another reality show. Rosemary Guiley is with us tonight, and we are talking about dreams, and let's bring the caller on. 203, you're on the air with Rosemary.
Hi, Rosemary. Hi, Goldie.
Hi, Tricia.
How are you?
It's a good evening.
It is a good evening. I've been a dreamer my whole life. And my dreams, I dream pretty regularly. The nights that I don't dream stand out more than anything else, and there's only been really, you know, very few of them in my life. And my dreams have run the gamut between extremely profound and vivid to ramblings of and everything in between. Everything that you were saying about dreams before, about the teachers, about showing life into balance, about spirituality, about, like, all of that rings absolutely true for me. I love and value my dreaming time, and sometimes I really wish that I were more lucid in my dreams. I've had lucid moments where I've understood in the dream that I was dreaming, but then I never can take the step to then take control of the dream. And that was one question. But then my other question is, I did have a dream that I had this morning, which I woke up was woken up in the middle of, and it was pretty short. I had no idea what it meant. And so I am open for interpretation as far as what, you know, what you were suggesting about the ground rules, what resonates and stuff like that.
Sure. What was the dream?
Okay, so this morning I dreamt. I was in my car and driving along a mountain road with forest on either side. And when I got to the bottom of the hill, it was down a hill. And when I got to the bottom of the hill, there was a commuter lot. And a bunch of cars were in there. So I pull into the commuter lot. And I'm in my car, And this guy is across from me in his pickup truck. And he's got like a sort of house in the back of his pickup truck, but it's not, it's like a makeshift house. And he says, comes over to me and he says, I'm looking for a yes man. And I said, okay. And he said, this is my plan. And he lays out this long, complex plan, which in the dream I sort of phase out in the middle of. But the gist of it is that he wants me to take to do something about his finances to so that when he dies, his wife and children get this sum of money and the government doesn't. And he's willing to pay me handsomely for it. And it's involved, it's a long involved process, and he explains this whole thing, and I sort of phase out, but then I come in and I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if I want to do that. And so he says, well, think about it. And so the commuter lot and the car, I'm in my car, everywhere, like the commuter lot's full, and I look around the commuter lot, and for the rest of the afternoon and then the night, everyone is sleeping in their cars. And just like two cars down, I get an image and a flash of like undercover cops listening to conversations, writing things down. And then a cop car pulls into the commuter lot, lights on and flashing, and goes two cars down and arrests this, like these two people. And in the dream, I knew that they were being arrested because they were yes men. And so then there's this little element of danger, I know. But then I think, but then in the dream I also have a knowing that I'm not going to be caught, although I know I have to be careful. So I say to the guy the next morning, the sun comes up, and I say to the guy, yeah, I think that this will be okay. And then he's doing something, and so we go about our business, and I see these two people talking, gossiping about those crazy yes men. And I hear them talking about the fact that they're just untrustworthy, these two people, they're like really sort of, they're bad-mouthing them, bad gossip, and I don't hear any element of truth. And they also say that whenever a yes man is a girl, she's also a whore. So then the guy comes up to me, and then we're going to have a meeting about this, and he... And I'm on the floor because all of a sudden there's a corridor in the middle of the parking lot, but there's no walls, but we're protected. No one can see us. And he lays on top of me, and I immediately am thinking, I heard them gossiping about that, and I don't want to go there. So I push him off me, and he's understanding about it. He says, okay. And then he starts talking about the plan, and he says, so are you ready for the escape, though? I mean, are you prepared for that? And I look at him and I say, what escape? What are you talking about? And he goes to start to explain, but then I was woken up. It was morning.
Well, you've got a lot going on here, and I don't know if we'll be able to cover it all.
That's fine.
Like this could take up a good chunk of a dream work group, but I'll throw out a few ideas that might at least help you get started in understanding dreams. Have you done dream work in the past?
Yeah, I've kept a dream journal, and I haven't kept one. I haven't been very disciplined about it, but I have. I've had some pretty profound dreams that I've immediately written down, and then interpreted. I won't go into them. So, I mean, I know that there's some like. So yes.
So I'm going to zero in on a few of the images that jumped out at me, and some of these have some universal context to them, but you still also have to relate it back to yourself and things that are going on in your life. Cars are often symbols of the vehicles that we drive around life in. They're about us and ourselves and our self and our ego. Sometimes they can represent the body. So the kind of car you have, whether you're going fast or slow, getting lost, somebody else is driving, you're driving, you can't remember where you park it, et cetera, may have to do about situations in life and how well you feel you're in control, especially for the long term, because cars are often about journeys. Coming down from a mountain, mountains are often symbols of isolation, withdrawal, especially for contemplation or intellectual pursuits. So it could, something like this could represent a shift in thinking to another level, or that thinking needs to be drawn down to another level where other stuff is going on. Forests
okay.
are often symbols of the dark unknown, things that we don't want to go into. So they're on the side. Commuter lot speaks of public things over which an individual has very little control. They're places where people travel en masse. So
okay.
here again, it's another sort of direction control thing. A yes man, the whole thing around the finances and the yes man probably point to something going on in your life, and you may want to make some associations back to things. Finances have to do with more than money. They can represent our physical resources, mental resources, spiritual resources, time resources. They can represent health. They can represent self-worth as well. Wife and children may not literally be family members, but they might represent things that you feel you need to care for, that are dependent on you to be nurtured in some way by whatever resources the finances represent. And it's important for them to get it and not the government, i.e. not, well, I tell you what the government represents to me. It's an institution which squanders money and you don't see the results.
Okay.
That's an interesting definition of government, indeed.
Yeah. So you might apply your own definition of what does government spending represent to me.
Right.
But it's like, yeah, we all sink our money into the government. We kind of wonder where it goes. So there's
yeah.
something about spending one's self or resources wisely here for things that are important to you that need your care and nurturing.
Okay.
Undercover cops, police are authority figures, and often this represents the inner authority, that voice that all of us have inside of us, which says, you should do this, you ought to do that, you must do this, it's wrong if you don't do this. And a lot of times what we want to do and what our inner authority tells us we should do are at odds.
So when you say that, do you mean our inner authority like God or our soul, or our inner authority like our superego?
I would say it's more your superego. It's the things that
okay.
you're conditioned to think that you have to do.
Okay.
And that can go back to your childhood training, influence
mm-hmm.
from a spouse. It's quite often a parental sort of thing, you know.
Right, okay.
That. Or, well, I really ought to do this if I'm going to be a good person sort of thing. And often there's a conflict between how the heart is pulling us and what the inner authority is telling us. And, of course, we all have responsibilities. We have
right.
to balance our genuine responsibilities with our dreams and ambitions, dreams in terms of things that we aspire to do. But a lot of times our inner authority kicks in and prevents us from taking action.
Okay.
So, and it arrests people. It arrests people who agree, the yes men, you know, the yes men who are going to take care of these financial things. The inner authority arrests those people.
Okay.
And, you know, from there we get into, if it were my dream, feelings about where I ought to put my allegiance. Is it with the yes men, who other people say they're crazy and untrustworthy and the cops come and arrest them, somebody who's like a whore? There's some attitudinal things, I think, underlying the surface here. And... Now, the man who comes and lays on top of you, is that one of the yes men?
No, that is the man who is contracting with me to be the yes man.
Okay. A lot of times in dreams where somebody forces something on us or forces themselves on us, it's the dream urging us to pay attention. So spend some time in seeing how this man represents something, represents a force, maybe something within you, some feelings, some attitudes, some concerns. What is it that this person says about you? And by getting on top of you, it's like, let's get on top of the situation. You can't, you know, you can't ignore me now because I'm right on top of you, sort of. But in the dream, there's this feeling of escaping. So to cut to the chase, one of the messages that comes through in this dream, if it were mine, is that there's something that that I need to address, and I'm not certain I want to do it, and I'm looking for an escape route. And I'm listening to
Well, when he said, "Are you ready for the escape?" it was what he meant was after all of the duty was done, as far as the finances go, I would have to escape the country. Like I would have to leave, but in order to complete the yes man duty and secure the finances for myself and for his wife and children, I would have to escape. So it wasn't like I was trying to escape the situation, the yes man situation right there. It was for the future once this is done.
Well, I just have a feeling that if you can get to the real meaning of the undercover cops, the need to escape is going to go away.
Okay.
So play around with those things, and a lot of times you get the inner aha where something really clicks. And some of the things that I've said may have hit a target, or but at least if they didn't hit a direct target, they may get you thinking in terms of finding the target.
Absolutely. And a lot of things that you said a lot of things that you said about the symbolism of different things do hit a target, like echo and reflect things that are happening in my life as far as that goes. So I think that you've provided a very good base for me to explore what more it means.
You've certainly got a lot going on here, and I think that you'll find that this is a very productive dream to work with. It's probably got a number of layers to it that relate to different things on different levels for you. And a lot of times when we do dream work with high-content dreams like this, we continue to get insights. You know, you'll think that you've arrived at the main meaning, and then something else will happen where you suddenly see a new perspective on the dream. Quite likely you will have another dream or more dreams that illuminate this one even more.
Okay. Thank you. As far as lucid dreaming, do you have any suggestions as far as, like, when I realize I'm dreaming, anything that I can do to... activate the lucidity.
Well, I have a few, and I have to admit that I am not a really good lucid dreamer myself, and I've experimented with a lot of techniques. Some people just seem to have the gift, you know, they came into the world, the Mozarts or the lucid dreamers, and the rest of us like chopsticks sort of thing. I would recommend that you go on the Internet and look up the work of Robert Wagoner, and that's with two G's, W-A-G-G-O-N-E-R. Robert is very active in the International Association for the Study of Dreams, and he's quite a good lucid dreamer, and he wrote a very good book on lucid dreaming. So I highly recommend that. The things that I've tried, I've had the most luck with, and this is going to sound strange, catnip tea.
Really?
Catnip tea is non-toxic to people. You can get it in a health food store. It doesn't work for everyone, but you kind of have to experiment around with things. Like some people have tried mugwort and, you know, St. John's wort and things like that, or melatonin. It doesn't cause lucid dreaming, but for me, it makes dreams more vivid. And sometimes when I'm in these intensely vivid dreams, I can spring into these lucid states. And then once I'm in a lucid state, I have been able to hang on to the lucidity for longer periods of time. And you know, the standard techniques are touching things and noticing details and trying to direct the dream, or to do something unusual in a dream. Like one of the things I do is, you know, levitate or fly around. With a lot of people, it's like almost as soon as you realize you're lucid, you lose the lucidity.
That's right. What I've heard, yeah.
And other people, I know some people that, you know, every night they have multiple lucid dreams. All their dreams are lucid, and they direct everything in a dream.
Right.
And I'm very jealous.
Let me ask you a question. If someone was being lucid all the time, then is it actually their subconscious is no longer sub? It is now conscious? Because
we actually don't really understand why some people are more able to lucid dream than others. And in a lay explanation, I suspect there's something in dreaming DNA or dreaming consciousness that just enables some people to more readily enter that particular state. You know, some people have a difficult time even remembering dreams. They dream,
right,
and
right.
They remember them, and other people remember lots of dreams, but they can't get very lucid.
Right.
It is thought by researchers that lucidity represents a step down the road in evolution of human consciousness that more of us will be expanding into, that lucid dreaming will take us more into other dimensions where we have these tangible, real experiences. And this may be something that human consciousness as a whole isn't quite ready to embrace yet. And some of us are out there on the frontiers of this, able to have these experiences. And all of us seem to be able to have a few experiences. But, you know, the work that Bob Monroe did, mapping out the other realms that he saw while he was
jumping
out of body in this semi sleep state. It's kind of like a dream state that he was in when he was out around in all of these other dimensions. That may be the forerunner of where human consciousness is going in terms of dreams. Some people have had a lot of luck with, you know, setting intentions and things like that. I have done a combination of catnip tea and intention setting, like have something that I want to try and accomplish in a lucid dream. And those things work for me. They don't work as well as I would like them to. That is, it's not 100% of the time, and the results vary quite a bit. But Robert, I got to know Robert years ago when I was in the IASD. I have a lot of respect for him. He's devoted years of study to lucid dreaming, and probably is one of the best persons out there with the practical stuff.
Nice.
Excellent.
Well, thank you for calling in, Tricia, and hopefully you'll stick around, because I'm going to put you on mute, but you're welcome to stick around and listen to the rest of the show.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. So, Ro, what was very interesting when you were interpreting Tricia's dream is that in the dream state, we can actually create like an emotion into a being in order to deal with that emotion.
That's very true. A lot of images in the dreams are literally an expressed emotion. Take, for example, dreams where you're being pursued by something monstrous or dark or threatening.
Oh, you mean the ones I've had most of my life? I can do that. Sorry.
I mean, sometimes it's a monster, you know, sometimes it's, you know, an enraged killer who's, you know,
exactly
black or something like that. And,
okay.
These figures often portray emotions we have. They're,
yes.
You know, they're, you know, gelled in these figures. And they can also represent situations that, to be pursued by something in a dream often relates to something that we're not confronting. We have a lot of fear and anxiety around those situations, and that's how it gets expressed in the dream, is great fear.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, because have you ever, I don't know if you've personally experienced it, have you ever experienced in the dream the need to run or get away, and you move in absolute slow motion with a feeling like you are just weighed down by 2,000 pounds of pressure? Because either I'm going to run and that happens, or when I'm going to fight in a dream. Like, I'll go to throw a punch, and it is literally slow motion with no, and I'm like, come on, I need some velocity here. And it just doesn't show up. That has happened to me on many occasions. I'm curious if you have, I realize it might mean something to me specifically, but is there a general explanation to that, or?
Well, there's some thought that that's a reflection of the literal sleep paralysis that we experience during the night.
Okay.
And there are physical things, like from our environment or what the body is experiencing, that can pop out in our dreams. For example, if you go to bed very thirsty, you may have a dream of drinking water.
Okay.
Sounds that are in the environment can become incorporated into dreams, into the action of a dream. And those dreams where we can't move the body, we may be having those dreams while we are in states of sleep paralysis, and
okay.
That becomes reflected into the dream as well. Which doesn't mean that there isn't some symbolic meaning to it, too. I think that we always have to look at dreams in terms of their symbolic content as well as acknowledging that there just may be something physiological going on as well.
Right.
For example, what's going on in the greater situation in the dream? Are you trying to get to something or from something, and what is that, and who else is involved, and what are the other circumstances? And that ability
right.
to get away or to accomplish something may have the symbolic meaning.
Yes, because I'm usually running from my fears. That is, and fighting is usually, whenever I'm in a physical fight, I'm always, whether it's in a dream or in real life, I mean, I don't fight so much now, but as a kid, I fought often, got my butt beat often, but it was always a matter of, I was always very frightened of the fight, and my mouth would keep running, and I'd go, but you're going to get yourself into one again anyways, aren't you? Yep. Here, you know, it's like, it was almost like, what is the disease with the two personalities? Not multiple, just the two. Schizophrenia. You know, it was like, I'm battling myself because I'm like, you know, Goldie, shut up. Just shut up. And yet the mouth keeps running. And inevitably the fight will come, and then I can't fight. Because my heart is never in a fight, dreaming or living. I've never been into a fight. But like I said, I've found myself in several in my lifetime as well as my dream time.
Well, those sorts of realizations that you've had probably have a lot of merit. Because, like I was saying earlier, ultimately only the dreamer can decide what
right.
the meaning of a dream is. And we can take all this input in from all the suggestions that we read about online and in books and in groups and whatnot, and we still have to arrive at our own internal aha. And that's because the dream is going to relate to the uniqueness of the individual.
Right. Right. It's, you know, it's so amazing, too, because one other thing I want to say is the way you describe the dream state can also be literally, it's like a synonym of God. You know, like people, as I go through this ascension process and have awarenesses and mystical experiences, the one thing that rings true for me is when people are like, you know, it's one thing to have somebody talk to you about God, but the truth is God is one of the most personal experiences you'll ever have. You know, extraordinarily personal experience. And I'm cracking up because as I'm listening to you talk about dreams and how it's personal, it's like, wow, it's almost like it's the God aspect of self, dreaming.
I think
because
it is.
Because
it's,
yeah.
Our dreams take us into contact with truth with a capital T. And that's unique for each of us. It is that connection with the all that is. You know, I mean, even Plato expressed that in a way. He called dreams the between state. And
exactly.
It's the place where mortals go to meet the gods.
Exactly. Well, and we do it every night, which is so funny how we, you know, for those of us that are diligent on this path of the light worker and ascension, you know, every night we go to sleep and we ascend. You know, we have outer body experiences. We dance with other realms. Because I've only gone lucid twice. And ironically, the one that I had the most, like, because I agree with you. When you talked about going lucid and then when you realize it, you wake up or it pulls you out of it.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first experience. And I was actually underwater, breathing in my dream underwater, which was pretty amazing. But then when I realized that I went lucid, I came out of the dream. Then the second time I went lucid was like a week or 2 weeks after my mom died. I believe she came to me in the dream because she spoke to me. But again, I don't know because I don't know if it's part of the one self. Whatever the case, I went lucid in the dream because I was so devastated once she died that I'd never be able to hug her again. You know, that was like something I just kept running in my head. Oh, my God, what am I going to do? I can't hug my mom. How can I go? You know, I'm 35 years old. I can't live knowing I can't hug my mom. I don't understand this. And then a week later, she's in my dream, and what am I doing? Of course, I'm hugging her. And when I went lucid was when, wait a minute, if I'm hugging her, this is not on the other side. This is on this side. But I was like, I don't care. This is phenomenal. And she actually started talking to me. Like my mom had this huge tumor on her breastbone. So I ripped open her shirt, and she was like, no, it's gone. I'm not in pain anymore. You know, I've been released from it. I'm fine. You know, she really did seem to, like, talk to me as if it was her being. Because I remember, you know, at one point in the dream, we were just lying on the bathroom floor in her room, you know, kind of gossiping about, you know, oh, and so what's been going on with you? Oh, well, you know, I've been, you know, broken up and terrified that you left. What's been going on with you, Ma? And here's the funny part about it. I don't remember what she said was going on with her. I remember what I said, but I don't have recollection of what she said where she's been, which I think is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
You know, almost like maybe I just don't have that. I'm not ready for that awareness yet. I'm sure on some level I might remember it, but I don't remember it, you know, to repeat it. I can only, you know, it's like, well, Ma, I've been pretty torn up. And I can remember saying, so where have you been? And then I don't remember what she said. So, you know, there's implications running all over the place.
I think a lot of our dream encounters with the dead are lucid and that they are genuine encounters. There are dreams of the dead that I think are symbolic, that are part of our grief processing, but there's quite a body of literature about these meaningful dreams that are meetings with the dead. And
okay.
I do think that the dead have the ability to come and visit us. I don't think that it's easy. In fact, I don't think any communication from the other side is easy, or we would have it
more often.
More often, more readily.
Yeah. Or at least, right, we'd at least be more conscious of it.
Right. But invariably, people who have these sorts of dreams feel that they are real experiences. They're lucid. You know, they feel like they're really there, just like they're really in waking life. And the dreams often have kind of an eerie aspect to them. I mean, they're not exactly like waking consciousness, but the other person looks and feels real. You feel like you're really present with them. There's communication. Sometimes it's telepathic. There may be some touching as well, like hugging someone. Often the dead people say that they'll often make remarks like, well, this is, I've only got a short time, or I have to go now, I can't stay any longer.
Right.
Indicating that these openings between the worlds are temporal, you know.
Right.
They come open for a while and then they close, and it's the meeting is possible in the dream state. People do have experiences in waking consciousness where they may have a vision or a sense of somebody's presence, but in the dreamscape we have a much different encounter with the dead, and I think that those are genuine, real experiences.
I agree. I mean, meaning it felt very real, especially once I went lucid. And for me, it was just such a wonderful, it was like, you know, she died in such a, I mean, the body was just beat up with cancer, beat up with chemotherapy. And to see her, you know, I don't think that she was 30 per se, but I just remember her in the dream as healthy. You know, she was in a very healthy state of being. And for me, that's a much better closing for me, so to speak. Because my mother has since come back in my dreams, but she becomes, or I have dreamt about my mom. I have not gone lucid again. But I've woken up going, oh, you know, mom was in the dream last night. It's like I smell her perfume at times. I've actually had the experience that I could taste her. And I don't know how to explain how that is, but, you know, I just know that there have been times I'm like, wow, I can taste my mom. And people are like, and what does your mom taste like? And I'm like, I can't explain how I know that. I just know there's a taste in my mouth, and it, you know, it's my mother. You know, who are we to say how these things work? But that dream for me was definitely, it helped me to know she was okay. You know, I had always believed, not always, but I had this knowing, like I used to say to my mom, Mom, you're going to reincarnate and, you know, all sorts of stuff like that. And she'd be like, no, I'm going to die. You're going to bury me and that's it. And I'd be like, you know, it's unfortunate you don't believe it, but that's not going to change the truth. The truth is you're not going to, your body will go in the ground, but you will continue on. And it's funny, I didn't have the wisdom I do now. Since her passing, it almost became so personal to me to understand the whole idea of consciousness and the mystical aspects of it, as well as from the dream state, because of her death, it really became, you know, a focal point for me to understand what is life, what is death, what's illusion, who's awake, who's asleep. You know, I mean, you go into the Course in Miracles and they'd say, we're the ones sleeping, and when we go to sleep, we're awake. You know what I mean? It's like, there's a lot of significant literature out there that kind of turns everything on its head, so to speak, meaning life itself, not the dream interpretations, just, you know, what is the real the truth with the capital T, what we do when we're awake with the five senses, which are clearly limited,
or what we're doing when we're asleep, when we're timeless and spaceless and are jumping all over the place and breathing underwater. And, you know, I mean, my mother has taken me through wormholes and all sorts of stuff in the galaxy. I mean, which one is, you know, which one is more valid? I can honestly tell you at this point, my mantra is, I don't know. I don't. I know I'm fascinated with both worlds. And that's one thing I would like to, the more I'm comfortable, because those dreams of being chased, I had this one dream. I was working with a shaman from Ecuador. I had a dream, this huge being, it was just monstrous. I mean, it was just everything scary to me, you know, the seething teeth with that drippy jelly stuff and a screeching sound, and it was chasing me in the dream, and I literally, in the dream, turned around, stood and looked at it and went, I am that I am. And it popped. It disappeared. And I really believe that since then, I mean, I've had like one or two dreams since then, and this is going back a good 5-6 years ago, where I've been getting chased, but the reoccurrence of me being chased has significantly lessened since I faced it in that dream. And it wasn't always a monster chasing me. I would have, you know, rapists would chase me, thieves, mm-hmm. you know, just a lot of dark, quote-unquote, beings that, you know. And I can remember significantly waking up going, everywhere I hid, they would show up. You know, there was no good hiding place. And as a kid, when we used to play hide-and-go-seek with, you know, all the kids in the neighborhood, I could hide in places. They would literally go, if you don't come out, you can't play anymore because we can't find you. You know, it's like I knew I could hide well, but not against these things like you were saying in the dream. I could not hide from these things in my dream, and it was like, you know, it was almost like, okay, I surrender. I'm going to face you, and in my own light, in my own beingness, I popped them. I didn't even fight the being to get rid of it. I simply came into my own being, which when I was working with the shaman, he said that was a significant connection between me and my spirit.
And it reflected in the dream, absolutely.
Right.
I've always believed that our dreams don't present us with more than we can handle. When stuff begins to surface in dreams, we're ready to deal with it.
Yes.
We may not realize it, or we may still continue to try to avoid something, but the dreams indicate a readiness. Because in addition to mirroring the issue, the dream also provides the raw material for the healing process.
Yes.
So,
yes.
It's not like dreams just throw stuff at you.
Right.
You know, there you are.
No, absolutely. That's a great point to make. It's very self-contained. Yes.
They are the start of the solution of the healing process of, you know, the next step, whatever. Whatever is going on, dreams, they're an all-in-one kit.
Right.
And when people get into dream work and they start realizing that, you know, it can be quite an exciting discovery. And it stimulates more dreaming, and actually,
yes.
I would say better dreaming, because dreams are very responsive to attention. If we pay attention to, because we're paying attention to part of ourselves, if we pay attention to that, then that aspect of our consciousness, which I think comes from our higher self, in this dreaming process, then that aspect gets motivated to do more.
Absolutely.
The wonder of all is that we're in these incarnations, we're in this form, a physical form with consciousness as well, and yet nothing is wasted, whether we're waking or we're sleeping.
Right.
Nothing is wasted in terms of growing, understanding more, being more enlightened, healing, regenerating ourselves. Nothing is wasted, whether we're waking or sleeping.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. Because, you know, again, we think, you know, there are levels of consciousness about us that we think when we go to sleep at night, all we're doing is the body's regenerating and it's this imaginary thing. And you know what I'm saying? There are certain, you know, when I've had people say to me, I don't dream. And I'm like, of course you dream. They're like, no, I don't. And I went, no, more accurately stated, you don't remember your dreams. It's like, but to not dream would mean you don't exist. You know, people don't recognize it as that's life on the other side that you're experiencing.
It's
the other side of just this, you know, meaning multi-dimensional other side. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
Well, science feels that, you know, everybody dreams, and it's a matter of remembering. Dreaming sleep has been demonstrated in a laboratory even when people don't recall their dreams when they wake up. There are certain physical traumas that do result in disruption, even cessation of dreaming, and these tend to be very severe head traumas.
Really?
There is some literature. If you read the medical literature, there are some papers and studies done on these. You know, we're talking about a very, very small number of people. What does that do to an individual when they are literally deprived of the dreaming mechanism? Does the organism compensate in some way for the benefits of that process? But by and large, yes, people dream. Recall varies. Some people remember dreams in terrific detail or multiple dreams every night. Other people are lucky if they can remember a fragment or two. Some people can go a while without remembering. Dreaming takes energy. You know, it takes psychic energy. And,
right.
It's not unusual for dream recall to drop off if our energy is being pulled from us in other ways, like if we're in the midst of trying situations or, you know, we're undergoing health issues. Those may increase dreaming. They may decrease dreaming, recall. That
right. Right, right.
And also our recall drops off as we get older.
Really?
So, and again, it's not 100% of the population, but these are trends. That the older, because you spend less and less time in REM sleep. Now, we dream in both non-REM and REM. Scientists have been able to measure better the REM sleep because that's the rapid eye movement, which, you know, can be physically observed.
Right.
But as we get older, for example, babies spend most of their time in REM sleep. But an older person, someone who's in their senior years, you know, their 70s and 80s, they spend far less time in REM sleep.
Wow.
So that affects the amount of time we spend dreaming, and, of course, our faculties of memory lessen in acuity as we get older, so our dreaming recall does drop off. I have noticed since I moved to sometimes changing place and locale and making big changes in life can stimulate your dreaming. You know, it's been almost a year since I moved to Connecticut, and it's done wonders for my dream life. I was beginning to get kind of concerned that my dream recall had dropped off quite a bit, and I don't know whether I was just in you know, like a fallow period or something.
Right, right.
Changing locale and coming. I used to live in Connecticut back in the 90s. I'm back in Connecticut now. I love Connecticut. I think it's a gorgeous state. I love the energy. I'm very happy where I'm at. And all of these things, I think, have reawakened my ability to recall my dreams. And
you think the land has something to do with that, like the whole energetic ley lines, that kind of stuff?
Well, I've always thought that the earth energy, the energy of place, can have an impact on dreams. There have been scientific efforts to study this without conclusive result. You know, just nothing that statistically science could feel comfortable with. However, it's the personal conviction of many people who've studied dreams that, yes, energy of place can have something to do with that.
And that makes total sense.
I've just gotten myself into an environment where, you know, psychologically I feel better. I had the feeling that, coming back to Connecticut was going to be very good for my creativity, and I do feel that it has been. And, in fact, I've had friends of mine comment on this, that, you know, I just seem to be in a much different space now. And it has impacted my dreaming. So it's not that we should pack up and move, you know, and
no.
stimulate our dreaming, but there are all kinds of influences on our ability to recall dreams that we may not be aware of.
Right, because I would imagine if you lived, I mean, I've seen these houses that are built, you know, at the bottom of these tower things, you know, these, you know, those things that look like aliens. They're some sort of electrical tower or something. I mean, and first of all, I say to myself, how could you live at the bottom of that without having some conscious effect on your being? You know, there's got to be a wave or a radiation. Something's got to be emitting from being literally, you know, the backyard is the tower.
Well, in fact, just in paranormal investigation, people who live in quote-unquote hot zones, where, you know, they're in a house or in a general area where there's a lot of activity, paranormal activity, that can have an impact on dreams, too, and the content.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would assume for the worse, not for, you know, because this isn't exactly healthy radiation waves.
Yeah.
These are distorted. You know, don't they do distorted things to our beings?
Well, they can, yes. If you are subjected to certain electromagnetic fields, and there have been studies of the effects of, you know, these,
like telephone lines or whatever and stuff?
Power lines and whatnot.
Power lines, exactly.
Our physiological well-being, it would certainly impact, I would think, our dreaming as well. And, you know, there have been experiments about electrically stimulating certain parts of the brain to cause, you know, visionary experiences. So I would imagine that those sorts of fields could have an impact on our dreams as well. And other things can depress dreaming recall. A diet can, the state of your health, medications that you take. And certainly as we get older, you know, a lot of people start having to take medications to regulate all sorts of things. And a lot of those can have an impact on dream recall.
And you're not talking about just the antidepressants and stuff. You're talking about, like, you know, cholesterol drugs or something to that effect, blood pressure drugs, those regular drugs?
Well, I've had inquiries from people who've started taking things like for blood pressure and cholesterol, and they found that their dreaming changes. Like,
interesting.
They've lost the ability to recall dreams the way they used to. And is there a uniform effect? It's really hard to say because people react so individually to drugs. Also, you know, what's the whole content of stuff you're ingesting? You know, that's people take combinations of things too. So the best thing to do is if you've started taking medications and you've noticed changes in your dreaming recall or the content of your dreams, it's best to bring it up with somebody who's qualified, you know, like your doctor or a psychologist, for example, who does dream work and is familiar with those things.
Yeah, good advice, indeed. There's actually There's another thing I want to talk about because I personally find it to be fascinating, and it's definitely, you know, it's dream related. A mutual friend of ours, Mr. Phil Imbrogno, I have found that there have been, you know, times in my life where, like, me, Phil, and a couple of people were, like, getting up at, like, 5 o'clock in the morning to go to one of the chambers to see the sunrise, you know, on a solstice. Mm-hmm. What I found interesting is that night we Phil gave the room to me, Alana, and Joan. He gave us his bedroom. So while I was sleeping in Phil's bed, an entity in my dream came down from the ceiling, and it was one of those, like, severely malicious clowns, the kind you would see in Stephen King's It. Mm-hmm. Now, what I got when I woke up, and boy, did it wake me up, I was scared witless, man. I was frightened. It was a wicked, like, oh, my God, that was crazy. Now, here, in my personal opinion, I believe that there is a vortex created at some level because Phil is a very conscious person who walks between the worlds, that I believe that being in his space, it was just simply a matter of the vortex was already open, and I was seeing, I was almost experiencing, like, his vortex, not necessarily mine. And I'm curious what your feelings on are about that. I believe we talked about this at Thanksgiving, too.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to know for certain because I do think that energy of place can affect people's dreams. However, if you were there with an anticipation that you might have some unusual dreams, that also could affect your dreams as well. So where does one leave off and the other start?
Chicken and egg kind of thing.
It's kind of hard to know.
Right.
Places where people have done a lot of work, you know, meditation or prayer or, you know, work of consciousness, I do believe that alters the energy of place. And that other people can experience that energy of place in different ways. So would you have had that dream in another location? It's kind of hard to say. The being in a new environment and maybe a subconscious expectation that, you know, something of a metaphysical nature would happen there. You have the anticipation of going to the stone chambers, and sometimes in anticipation of something, especially those chambers, which have their own energy fields as well,
exactly.
The dreaming mind could be reaching out into the time-space landscape to pull something in relation to that, too. So it's a really strange brew of things that can result in that.
Yeah. No, that's very valid. It is very. I mean, because you know, there's been a few occasions where I have been at Phil's house. Never like that. I mean, and it's so funny because now, you know, when given the opportunity, I take the guest room. Because God bless Phil. I mean, he does a lot of, you know, he is saving the planet on many levels, and I'm truly grateful to him. It's just not my work to be done. It's all takes a guest room. but because, you know, I've personally only been involved in, like me and a good friend of mine, in fact, you know her too, Alana, what we tried for a while was we would, you know, talk to each other before we went to sleep and say, okay, let's set a destination and meet in the dream state,
mm-hmm.
She would have experiences of us being together. If I had those experiences, I didn't remember them. But I've been told by other people that if you set the intention, it is happening, even if you don't remember it.
It's certainly quite possible. That's mutual dreaming, and I think that human beings do a lot more mutual dreaming or shared dreaming, as it's also called, than we realize.
Right.
And quite often, setting your intention with a person to meet in the dreamscape can result in various levels of shared dream, from having a lucid dream in which you are with each other.
Right.
From having exactly the same dream with each other in it, or just similar dreams with or without each other, or some of the same elements. There's so many levels to the shared dream.
Right.
And then we also have to consider time displacement, too, because the dreaming mind is beyond linear time. So setting the intention to share the dreamscape wouldn't necessarily happen on the same night, too. And does it happen without us being aware of it? I think that our dreaming mind does go places that we don't recall when we wake up. Sometimes doing those shared dreaming experiments, you have to do them for a while before you have a whole lot of success with them.
Right. Yeah, there's a good friend of mine, Daniel Jacob, works with quote-unquote star kids, and he has a whole forum on it. They're literally doing psychological work in the dream time. I mean, they're like doing this amazing work, and they're conscious of it, at least the kids are. I don't know if Daniel is. I think Daniel is. But I know there are literally people now that, you know, they are group consciously meeting in dreams time. You know, and doing healings, creating healing around it.
If you get the right mix of people, and individuals have experimented with this quite a bit, if you have a really tight group that's in tune with each other, you can have more of this intentional dreaming with higher degrees of match and success. And it's absolutely fascinating because it's a unity of consciousness that is liberated to another level than we have in waking consciousness. And
exactly.
I think there we really experience this this concept of thoughts are things. What you think can be immediately manifest.
Exactly. And if you're doing it as a group, the others are experiencing it too. That is essentially living, you know, as a non-physical being, yet living, you know, alive as a non-physical being.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's experienced as the physical in that state, it's much more etheric physical because, you know, I also heard, you know, like, if you take your attention off things in dream time, things disappear. You know, they don't have the lasting ability that we do in this level of density. If we're not paying attention to it, then it goes back into the soup of consciousness and waits to be, you know, created by a focused intent again, you know? It's like attention is intention in the non-physical form. Even though I have not experienced myself experiencing that in my dreams, but I have a sense of it that I've experienced that somewhere in my being.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how else to explain it. You know what I'm saying? It feels like, because like Robert Monroe, he talks a lot about that. That's kind of that whole walking between the worlds and different levels of consciousness. And, you know, because I think like a lot of things that we dream about, like one of my teachers said to me, at the level of consciousness that I'm in, when I don't remember a dream, it's because my consciousness has left that which my brain can decipher. I'm beyond the earth realm. So it's not about not remembering. It's about there's no words. There's nothing to compute to it to bring it back in when I come to this reality.
Mm-hmm.
It's out there. And, you know, I mean, that can, you know, I'm not trying to sound conceited or anything, but when that was said to me, there was a resonance to that. It's like, okay, I can see that. you know, because I'm all about let's expand. Let's keep going, you know, farther. What was it that Roddenberry said? You know, let's go check out things that haven't been checked out before.
That's right.
So
There's a lot about dreams that does defy one's ability to explain it or put it into words, and the same occurs in mystical experiences.
Right.
Almost everyone who's had a profound mystical experience is often at a loss of words, or they say things like, you know, words cannot describe.
Right.
Same thing with lucid dreaming. The things that you can experience and see and intuit, there aren't any words to encompass those. So this is, you know, gets back to the intuitive understanding of a dream, and when you intuit the content and the meaning of dreams, I think that it goes deeper into your being, and it lies there beyond rational comprehension, the ability to put things into linear thought and words. But it is understood at the level of spirit and soul.
Yes, beautifully stated. I absolutely. I mean, and I think more and more of that is happening to people, whether we're aware of it or not. You know, in other words, it almost seems like there's a quiet evolution going on. And I feel like, you know, at some point, it's almost like, you know, it's the chicken and the egg. It's growing inside. And inevitably, you know, it's going to pop. It's going to pop its beak out, and it's going to be born into this existence. I mean, I know everybody I'm reading, you know, about what's coming between now and 2012 is, I mean, some really, really profound experiences. And the stuff that I resonate with is all about, you know, like, you know, it's the next coming of heaven on earth. You know, it's having the ability to bilocate, and all of us, you know, our telepathic abilities, and, you know, if manifesting instantly. These are, you know, all aspects of things we can do in the dream state that are, according to the people that I follow, you know, being there's a momentum creating it in this dimension. Not just in our dream state, but in this dimension. I mean, and that's like, God.
Well, these abilities and awarenesses certainly are part of our potential, or we wouldn't have the experiences. And I think that human beings have the potential to grow in that direction. But I don't see anything radically changing at 2012. I think that in fact, these changes really have to happen on a gradual basis. I think that if the world suddenly woke up with super mental and super normal abilities to have, you know, telepathy, the ability to see the future, the ability to manifest thoughts, to use thoughts to manipulate other people, et cetera, et cetera, this world would be so instantly in chaos because human beings have not mastered their lower nature. And
right.
Until they do, it's probably a good thing that the masses do not have the mastery of these abilities, because it requires an enlightened consciousness to do so. And I don't think that enlightenment is going to happen in the twinkling of an eye.
Right, right. I'm the eternal optimist. I mean, I have to be, only because when you're living from a place of, you know, this is interesting. I live from a place from, I am learning, you know, true forgiveness, unconditional acceptance, and unconditional love. When you live from that space, it's amazing how challenging it is. Like, one of my teachers, I was listening to a channeling last night or the night before, and they were like, what's going to make this lifetime the most difficult is not that you're going to become enlightened, because many of the people that I hang out with and what I believe is my group soul is that we already ascended and then we came back in this lifetime to experience it with the planet, that the planet is going to go through an ascended process. Mm-hmm. But what he said was, what's going to make it the most challenging is to be enlightened in body. Because normally if you go through the ascension process, I guess, you know, according to the Bible and other things, you would ascend out of the physical. But to be physical and be, you know, it's like, you know, I constantly have to say to myself, anger is not the answer. And it's not that I don't get angry. I get angry, but I can't blame anyone. I can be angry, but not at someone. I can just experience anger. And I can experience sadness and all these things. It's just a matter of, for me, if I don't hold the idea of heaven coming to earth, I'm going to crack. Because it is an incredibly challenging, it's already challenging to hold these experiences. But then to think it's not going to change, like, you know, for the next 50 years, whoa, that's way too heavy on my show. That might be the truth, whatever the time frame, too. I know you didn't mention a time frame.
Well,
I'm just saying, for myself, I have to say that simply because if I don't hold the optimistic point of view, it just gets too heavy. I mean, it's just too heavy.
Well, I think we all have to stay focused on the high road. But I kind of agree with Sri Aurobindo, who saw this happening over thousands of years.
Right. Right. I'm on more the, you know, I want to see the accelerated twinkling of an eye. Well, again, and part of the reason why I say that is I have this sense that it's happening in the subconscious or somewhere where it's like this silent thing and it will just show up. You know, because I look at life and because there are a little bit of signs just in the sense of the media. I mean, every major network has either a Ghostbusters, you know, or a medium show or someone's talking to the dead or talking to angels or, you know what I'm saying? There's clearly metaphysics, but I'm starting to learn metaphysics and mystical are light years away. You know, like you were saying, you know, if for an unenlightened society to have the ability to manifest their thoughts, that would probably equal hell on earth, not heaven. Because you're absolutely correct. They haven't. Most of the people have not mastered their thoughts. You know, in other words, it still feels better to get pissed at your neighbor than to love the one who's pissing you off. You know, I see that on several occasions with many of the people I know, including myself, except for myself, I'm like, listen, I don't want to come back here anymore. Maybe it'll just be my earth maybe it'll be my personal subjective experience that something happens and I go to a space where there's heaven on earth because, you know, like, because there are some people that are actually saying, you know, that it's not that the whole planet goes together. It's that you have a frequency and the based on the frequency where you are, will base what earth you are experiencing life on.
Well, you might
have
to shift into a parallel dimension where you're still on earth and still doing, you know, similar things, but you're in another frequency vibration.
Exactly. So, but by standards, if you looked around, it would look very different than the earth of, you know, if there's a warring earth and, you know, an earth where there's cataclysmic events, which is what, I mean, it's clear that a lot of people are, you know, buying into this 2012, you know, cataclysmic, apocalyptic stuff, you know, and I'm going, hey, it's a birthing pain of heaven. We clearly are on two different sides of that coin, so to speak, and so maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's, you know, just another dimension. Because in other words, we can all be right for whatever it is that our frequency is taking us to. I don't know. I mean, it's so funny. My mantra, I know nothing. Because we can't, you know, how do we, this is all, I guess, we're, you know, when science doesn't know, well, of course science doesn't know, you know, I don't even think consciousness knows. I don't even think God knows. I think it's all kind of unfolding, you know, spontaneously and beautifully, but, you know, kind of like our dreams. I mean, to go lucid, does that mean that they can actually, you know, control the whole dream? You know, like everything? It just seems, or could they just control how they respond in the dream?
There are people who have had lucid dreams who feel that they can control the actions of other people in a manipulative sort of way.
Really?
There are quite a few varying degrees to lucidity.
Right, right. Because when I went lucid, it was just simply that I knew I was dreaming because I knew my mother was not physical anymore. But I didn't know what my mother was going to say to me. I just knew that we were not in the third dimensional plane where this conversation was taking place. That was the extent of my lucidity.
And that would be a more common level of lucidity, I think.
Right.
People who can regularly exert, total control over lucid dreams, I think those people are in the distinct minority. Possibility of having such a dream, however, is available to just about anyone, and certainly individuals may have at least one such dream over the course of time.
Right, right. Right, it makes total sense. See, everything about consciousness, whether we're talking about dreaming, awake, mystical, meditation, everything about consciousness is layers, you know what I'm saying, or dimensions. It's such a complex field to work in.
And here again, we're dealing more on the intuitive level of things, that these otherworldly experiences are intuited, they're felt, they're experienced. They're not processed in the same way that we process ordinary reality, which is mostly through the left brain. I mean, yes, we process things intuitively through the right brain, but we go about life in a very structured way. You know,
absolutely.
We like to think of ourselves as rational beings with structure and organization and applying reason to life. And these otherworldly experiences utilize those other aspects of consciousness to a far greater degree. So it's another side to our being that obviously we need to experience. And the mechanism for experiencing this in a profound way seems to be the dreaming state.
Yeah.
I think if we had these kinds of experiences regularly in waking life, we would become unhinged. And,
that's a great visual. That's a great word. Yes.
Well, we would.
Yes.
You know, it's reality requires a certain vibration of consciousness. And, of course, there are figures in history, mystics, that could barely function in the world because their consciousness was just oriented to these otherworldly realities, and they had a hard time navigating in this one. So
yeah.
The neat thing about dreams is that it enables us to have a foot in both worlds, so to speak,
right.
And we can mediate back and forth without losing our bearings here, but yet we can grow in that direction as well. And, of course, when we leave this reality, we will be navigating in other realities. And so maybe our dreams are preparing us for that.
Yeah, I definitely, you know, they're more than just what we do when we go to sleep. You know, I hope the listeners at least get that. You know what I mean? Dreams are just, you know, I think we're just scratching the tip of the iceberg of what the real potential or what the real opportunity of studying our dream time really can mean. Mm-hmm. You know, even just paying attention, like you said, just paying attention to ourselves, that part of ourselves that, you know, has the, you know, magical ability to, you know, if I'm not, if there's a part of me that is not loving myself or self-loathing, I create a monster that pretty much loathes myself. You know, it's like, I mean, to me that is like, you know, and that's the fearful side and the crazy side. And, you know, I've had amazing dreams where, you know, the feeling, you know, just being riding with the dolphins in the ocean and the whales and being underwater and able to breathe, it's like, wow, this is pretty cool. You know, it's like, it just seems to open up the whole arena of existence is opened up to us through the doorway we call dreaming. Because I remember when my mom was dying and she was in a coma, I had went to a automatic writer, and she was prolific at talking to people who had passed on. And I asked her specifically, I had told the nurse to give my mother a very large dose of morphine because her body was shutting down when she was in the coma, and it was just it was so hard to watch. I didn't want her to be in any physical pain. But I asked the woman, I was like, did I do the right thing? You know, I gave you this extra dose. I told the nurse to give you this extra dose of morphine. Was that the right thing to do? And she essentially said to me, first of all, she said, I'm out of the body more than I'm in. And she goes, to be honest, it feels no different than like when I'm dreaming. Mm-hmm. And then I had another teacher say to me, the only difference between dreaming and dying was when we die, we don't come back into the body. But dreaming and dying is the exact same procedure. It's just we have a silver cord of some kind that when we're done with the dreaming, we come back into the body. You know, it's like when you think about that, there's profundity in those statements.
Well,
you know, and it's like, am I, you know,
descriptions
please.
Descriptions of the astral plane where many people think that the dead go, at least initially, do
right.
have dreamlike quality to them. And I'm reminding of the movie What Dreams May Come.
Yep.
Literally.
Yep.
You know,
yeah.
The afterlife does seem to be an extension of dreaming. And as I was saying, it's quite possible that one of the functions of our dreaming is to prepare us for the afterlife and for experiences in other realms. We may not, after leaving this life, we may not come back to the earth. We may have the opportunity or make the choice to go somewhere else, to have a different kind of incarnation or to remain in some other disembodied state for quite some time.
Right.
And consciousness, I think, needs to be prepared for that. In reading the literature, the mediumistic literature of communications from the afterlife, one finds frequent references to the disorientation and confusion of the newly arriving dead. And the greatest, of course, comes from people who've had the shock of sudden, unexpected death.
Right.
And suddenly find themselves somewhere else. But it seems that the afterlife takes some adjusting to.
Right.
In terms of the laws there, the laws of reality. And,
right.
So maybe paying more attention to our dreams and doing a lot of dream work will facilitate the transition from the physical life into the afterlife.
Oh, I think that's a brilliant statement. Indeed. I mean,
I think I'll write a book.
That is, no, well, it's almost like, you know, in our culture, we do nothing to prepare us for death because we don't speak of it. And if we do speak of it, everybody's petrified of it. You know, are we going to hell? Are we going to heaven? You know, it's like there are other cultures I don't want to say, they welcome death, you know, as a very natural part of life, which is really what it is. It's like nobody can avoid it. We're all going to die. And, you know, and I mean, it just seems like there's so much more we can do while we're alive. Like one of the things that I found interesting is I had a dream, and I believe this was also, this was about 3 months after I was working with the, when I was working with the shaman. I had a dream that I was shot in the back of my head with a gun, point blank, twice. The gun barrel was at my head, it shot twice. I was in a convertible car, and I leaned forward and went, my head just got blown off. And yet what I noticed almost immediately was I'm not dead. You know, in other words, I still had the voice of me going, I'm talking, you know, I'm here. I'm not nothing. But I also had enough cognition in the dream to go, but don't sit up and let him do that again. Like, we don't want to get shot anymore, but let's think about this. And I was literally contemplating this with my head in my lap, going, I'm not dead. And when I woke up from that dream, I know when, you know, they've always said you'll never die in your dreams. It struck me profoundly that night because I realized you never die in your dreams because you never die. You can't die. You can stop having a body, but you can't die. You can't cease to exist because that doesn't, you can't cease to exist. There, you know, we are eternal beings that just keep, you know, we go from physical to the non-physical to physical to the non-physical. And, you know, that just really hit me profoundly from that dream that I think, because like I've heard at the moment of death, if you're in a very frightened state, it will put you into that frequency as you cross over because it will, you know, it is very much thought and created by us. You know, it's like if you're in a state of peace when you go, you know, you, according to the ghost whisperer, you know, you see the light, your family's there or your spirit guides, things that you're familiar with. Where, like you said, if you die in trauma and drama, I mean, a lot of these people don't even know they're dead. I mean, they're actually, or they're reliving their, you know, they're like in a loop where they're reliving their murders or deaths, whatever it may be. You know, it's just, I think it's just good that we're at least having conversation about this. You know what I mean? Just as a state of awareness that there's things that people can do. Because ultimately, we know we're all going to die. I would suggest you kind of help, you know, you want to do the best thing you can to help that one of those steps be, you know, a peaceful one, right? I mean, if given the choice.
Absolutely. It's probably the greatest fear that humanity has is
death
and what happens. And even though we have piles and piles of subjective evidence about the afterlife, people still are full of fear and uncertainty. Religion hasn't consoled very, very many people. Consoles some, but obviously doesn't console everybody because we would stop being afraid of dying if religion consoled us.
Exactly.
Science hasn't been able to prove anything. One of the things about spirit communications is, you know, people have tried to find evidence to demonstrate proof of the afterlife, and even when they come up with some pretty good evidence, it still doesn't sink in with people.
Yeah.
We've got a pretty good block around that.
Yes, we do. We do. Hey, we're almost at the top of the hour. Can you tell any plans you got coming up? Places where they can catch you, or there you go.
I'd like to mention my website, visionaryliving.com, and I have a blog and a monthly newsletter that I send out, which just has some little tidbits about what I'm doing and some of my personal experiences. I just got done with the February newsletter that's going out tomorrow. You can sign up for that on the website. I will be in West Virginia February 23rd through the 25th at the International Metaphysical University. I'm teaching classes on some dark things, vampires, werewolves, demons, and psychic protection. So that's coming up for me right away. And then in March, I start getting into investigations and conferences, and away we go for the rest of the year.
Right. Now, because this year, if possible, I would love to join you on, you know, some of the Connecticut, or not some, but a Connecticut haunting. And, you know, I'm just putting that out there. I would really like to be with you on one of these things. Cause, or even, I know there was that book we had, I forget who brought it to one of our groups, that all these hauntings in Connecticut. It's like, you know, I would love to do it and then do a show and talk about it, you know, talk about the experiences that we have, if you're open to that.
I'll be putting some things together. I've been talking to a number of people about, you know, what's possible on what dates, and Goldie,
okay,
that would be fabulous. So
excellent. Oh, excellent, Rose. Yeah, I would love to do that. Indeed. Well, it has been an absolute divine pleasure speaking with you for these last couple hours. I love you with all my heart. We will definitely have you on again. I like our solo. I mean, I love Phil, but I really like when you are given the opportunity to speak. Rosemary, your wisdom surpasses your years completely. You're beautiful. I enjoy your company very, very much.
Likewise, Goldie. I think we always get into some real interesting discussions. You've got a great show, and I've really enjoyed being on with you again tonight.
Oh, thank you. So I will I'll definitely be in touch to we'll rebook and we'll talk, and you know, we got a whole new year coming up for all of us to do our chamber stuff and hauntings, and 2010. Bring it on. I love you so much.
Year. Love you too, hon.
All right. Everybody, next week it will be with Shali. You are what you love. Have a great week, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye, everybody.